Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager here on Fireside. Yeah, I know why I said Fireside. You know that I analyze when I make errors. Why did I make it? Because the next word was chat, so there was an ah. So I did. I combined the fire. It's like, okay, it's really not important. I'm very tempted to start this over, but I won't, because that proves to you this is the real deal. It's quite spontaneous. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat. There's the Fireside, and there is Otto, America's dog. I was going to say puppy dog, but he's not a puppy anymore. America's dog, as it were. We talk about everything in life here. Why shouldn't? Well, we is true because you do. I interact with what you send in to me as much as anything that I have to say. Okay, so normally, like almost every single time of the 256, I have begun with some thoughts on some subject. On rare occasion, I go straight to your questions, and that's what I'm going to do today. That way I can take more of them. So we begin with the video question of the week. Megan 2 is handing me the iPad, and here we go.
Hello, my name is Elizabeth Pino. I am 15. I am from Springfield, Missouri. And my question is, what do you do when you believe homosexuality is wrong, but you're still attracted to the same sex?
That is one of the most important questions I can receive. I've devoted a big chunk of time to thinking about it. I'm just trying to do what I'm supposed to do now. I did it. I've got it down. So, Elizabeth, I can speak for hours on this. In fact, I think most of you will find this interesting. I am writing, as you know, a commentary on each of the first five books of the Bible, the most important books of the Bible, in my opinion. And that may sound almost sacrilegious, but I believe that I could make a very easy case for it. Everything comes from the first five books. The creation of the world, the Garden of Eden, the Exodus, the Ten Commandments, love your neighbor, love God, you name it, it's from there. Everything else is built on those five books known as the Torah. So, by the way, Deuteronomy is coming out in 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. You can pre-order it at PragerU. And it's a signed copy, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. You can get it, of course, at Amazon. You can pre-order it there, too. But the signed copies are at PragerU. And just for the record, wherever you're living in the world, you might find this of interest. The founders of the United States of America, which became the freest country in the world's history, I might add, cited the book of Deuteronomy. I just learned this. I didn't even know it when I wrote my commentary on Deuteronomy. I just learned it. I wish I knew it a year ago. They cited Deuteronomy more than any other book in their writings and in their speaking, even more than any of the Enlightenment thinkers like Montesquieu. It's really amazing. I did not know that. Makes sense. It's a very rich book. So it's called The Rational Bible. I hope you read it. So why am I mentioning this? Because the prohibition on male homosexuality, on male, specifically male homosexual relations, there's no prohibition on the homosexuality, it's on the homosexual behavior, which was engaged in by many otherwise heterosexual men in history, by the way. That's in the book of Leviticus. And I already wrote 20,000 words on that verse. I've written half a book on one verse. And I have gone over this with gay people, and I've gone over this with Christians and Jews. So your question is, what if you believe it is wrong, but you're attracted to the same sex? believe it or not, I have a different answer for both sexes, because male sexuality and female sexuality are quite different. So I'll give you an example with regard to the issue of the object of one's sexual desire. Women's sexuality is much more fluid than men's. Men's is much more likely to be fixed. A man who is attracted to women is very unlikely, not unlikely, it is inconceivable to me that you can do anything or he can do anything to stop being attracted to women. Whenever I talk about gays, Otto is very sensitive. I don't know why or what that portends. But anyway, this is the new thing on the Fireside Chat. Otto just gets up and leaves. You want to let him out? What's the story? His mommy isn't even here. Maybe he'll come back in. My wife isn't here, and he's leaving the room. It cracks me up. A man who is attracted to women, it is inconceivable that it could be undone. In other words, a fixed heterosexual is very unlikely to stop being a heterosexual. Those women whom women are attracted to, the sex that women are attracted to, women we're talking about now, not men, most women are attracted to men, just as most men are attracted to women. Not just most, the great majority, the vast majority. However, women's sexuality is more interested in the psychological, emotional, mental aspects than just the purely physical. Women want intimacy. Women want to hug. I'm not saying women don't love sex, but it's still not the same as men. If you want to believe women are like men, you are free to do so. It's still partially a free country. You can think what you like. But women are not like men. That is why the hookup culture has played with women's happiness much more than it has with men's happiness. In fact, the opposite. Men think it's great. Women don't, as a general rule. Because men want variety. Women are not variety-oriented. Women don't think, oh, I need another man. Oh, another man, another man, another man. Or as one wit once put it well, men love women, and women love a man. It's a good one, isn't it? That's the way it works. So one aspect of their not being similar in their sexual nature, men and women, is that women's sexuality is not as fixed as men's is. Women want, as I said, intimacy. And sometimes it will not matter which sex it is, as long as they have that intimacy. So while I believe there are women homosexuals, that's gay women, lesbians, who cannot find a man sexually desirable, they are not the majority of women who are lesbians, in my opinion, after a lifetime of study of this. They may prefer women, but they can, in fact, in most cases, have a pretty good experience with the right man. Whereas most men, you cannot say they prefer women, but they could have pretty much a really good experience sexually with another man. That's just not true. At least it's not true in the world in which we live, which is a separate issue. So why the Bible spoke against male homosexual relations is to address the following issue, which seems to negate some of what I just said. And to a certain extent, it does, but it's really a complementary fact. And that is that historically, every civilization allowed for male-male sexual behavior, and wealthy men could have a boy. Most of what men wanted was a young male, almost female-like, but it's still a male. I don't understand it. I fully acknowledge it. In the deepest recesses of my own psyche, there is no desire for a young or middle-aged or old male. I don't understand it, but it is irrelevant whether I understand it. What is relevant is that it is true. Every society allowed for male-male sexual behavior. So that in many societies, you had men having a wife and a boy lover. Very, very common. Certainly ancient Greece is the best known example of this. These men were not gay. They were, if you will, bisexual perhaps. But most bisexuals in our society are gay. They're just trying as well to have a woman. So what the Bible did was say to men, we want you to confine your sexual desires to women, and we want the marriage bed to be an erotic place. Because for many, many men, like in Greece or in Rome, but not all by any means, but many, women were for baby making and boys were for sexual pleasure. That's the way it worked. And what the Torah came along and said was, no, baby making and sexual pleasure is what you want with a woman. So confine your sexual behavior to the opposite sex in marriage. And that changed civilization, made the nuclear family stronger than ever, because you now had this erotic bond with your wife, not just a husband-wife bond. This is unknown to most people. Most people think that every society condemned homosexuality, and so did the Bible. No, the Bible was almost alone. I have, as when Leviticus comes out, you will see a quote I have from ancient Egypt praying that the... How do I put this, given that there are kids who watch this? To have a certain type of sexual behavior with one of the gods. It was an actual prayer. Male-male. And it was male-male. The prayer. So now to your question. For the Christian or religious Jew who is attracted to the same sex and who takes the Bible seriously or even as the Word of God, a real dilemma. That's a real dilemma. And my heart goes out to these people. My wife and I had dinner with a Christian. I really wanted to meet this man. I don't remember how I got his name. A gay man who, because he was Christian, said, I want to have a wife and confine my sexual behavior to her because I am a Christian and take the Bible as the Word of God. And as difficult as that will be, and of course, my wife will know that, and she does know that, that's what I want to do. So when I met him, the first question I asked, and I'll tell you, and I told him afterwards why, and I'm telling you now, the first question I asked him was, are you still attracted to men? He's now married with kids. Are you still attracted to men? And he said, yes. And then I said, okay, we can continue with the conversation. I know you're honest. You can't stop being attracted to the sex you're attracted to. It's especially males, but I think for many females as well. So he is attracted to men, but he has worked out a way. And many gay men, by the way, had, in our society, many gay men had sexual relations with a woman. That wasn't their first choice, but it wasn't impossible. So a tiny handful of them who are religious said, okay, I will still fantasize men and want men, but I want to live a what I consider a biblically based life. And so I will marry the opposite sex. This person will know my nature is homosexual, but I will still nevertheless function here and even learn perhaps to more be attracted to a woman. Or you figure a woman might say that. And most women who are lesbians can say that. Most lesbians in our society have had relations with men. They may not be as fulfilling, but that's true in many ways. Any good person has to suppress their urges to lead a monogamous life. Men suppress their urge for variety throughout their marriage. This is news to most wives. I speak to the wife on behalf of her husband. You have no idea how many couples have come over to me before speeches when I meet people at they call the meet and greet, and will say, I just want you to know, either the husband or the wife or both, how much you've done for my husband and me. I now understand him, and we have a much better sexual life. And I'm very thrilled to hear that. If your husband is faithful, and I hope he is, obviously, every so often, and I know this drives the people who deny reality, they're called progressives, crazy. But every so often, just as he will have to thank you every so often for the sacrifices you make to make a home and a marriage, it doesn't hurt every so often for the wife to say, honey, I know that your nature is to want a variety of women. And I just want you to know I'm grateful for the fact that you control it. And again, women have called me, told me they did that and how much it meant to their husband, that she appreciated that about him. When two people love each other, when a husband and a wife love each other, it is harder for the man to be faithful the whole time than for a woman. She is not struggling with, ooh, I'd like another man, if she loves her husband. But no matter how much he loves his wife, if he is in touch with his nature and isn't in denial, and it may not be true in 5% of the cases, but in 95% of the cases, he still wants variety, which is why she catches him looking. Now you'll say, oh, women look at other men too. Yes, but it's not the same looking, okay? And women in their heart of hearts know that. Life is a struggle. I spoke about that last fireside chat, isn't it? Life is hard. If you don't know that, you can't deal with life. So going into marriage, a man needs to know that. Hey, listen, I will never stop wanting other women, but I'm not going to lead a life led by my penis. I'm going to lead a life led by my values and my intellect and my reason. And the payoff of making a happy home as a monogamous man, as the man of the house, is infinitely greater than giving in to the urge for variety. That's what he will have to say to himself. So I would recommend to a woman, whether it's you or you're speaking on behalf of someone you know, I would say, acknowledge you are attracted to women. The question is, because you asked it, given that you know what the Christian, in your case, ideal is. Did she say she's Christian?
She didn't say that.
But it's a, yeah, I infer it, yeah. the religious, if you will, the Judeo-Christian, whatever term you wish to use, ideal, is, of course, that a man and a woman bond and make a home. So you know that, and you're torn, or your friend is torn. I don't know which, and it's not important to me. So I would say to a woman in that situation, follow your values more than your instinct. If you can't enjoy in any way, if a man repulses you, even a loving, tender, good man, sexual activity with him is repulsive, you can't respond, then what am I going to say? Live a life of revulsion with regard to a husband? Of course not. But if you can try it, that would be how I would aim. Can I one day relate this way to a man, even though I would still want women, just like the man I met still wants men? Most people, as I pointed out, most people suppress their nature to make a marriage work. That's true. We're not taught that, though. We're taught that, follow your heart. But it's not a great idea. The admonition against following your heart in the Bible is repeated and repeated and repeated. On the other hand, if as I said, if a man is not possible, then I don't want you to lead a lonely life, and you will bond with a woman, or your friend will bond with a woman, whomever you're asking on behalf of. That I don't want you to be alone. I don't know if God wants you to be alone. His first proclamation about the human being is not good for a man to be alone, and he certainly didn't think it was good for a woman to be alone. But given your value system, I would work on working on being intimate with a man when the time comes. Does that fairly address it?
That definitely covered a lot.
It did cover a lot. It's a very tough question. Life is very tough. The moment you know that, you will lead an easier life. Isn't that ironic? Mm-hmm. It's like if you know, and it's not a perfect analogy, but it's a good one. It's effective. If you know that there is a street that you're coming up to that has bumps to keep cars traveling slower, you will have a happier ride down the street than if you don't know there are bumps. That's the analogy I would give. In my book on happiness, called Happiness is a Serious Problem, I just got the Portuguese edition. Did I mention that?
No.
Yep. Somebody in Brazil sent it to me for 4 copies of the Portuguese edition. And I'm always thrilled about that because everything I write is for people in any culture. It's either true for everybody or it's true for nobody. That's my view. It's like my Bible commentary. If it's not good for everybody, it isn't good for anybody. And in it, I have a chapter on a tragic view of life, which I have. It's one of the reasons I'm happy. Because tragedy doesn't throw me for a loop. I mean, I'm sure that there are tragedies that could happen to me that would. But the nature of tragedy, I assume it. And as I write, life it's inherently tragic. You will die. Everyone you love will die. That's tragic. There's no way around it. So I celebrate every wonderful day that I have. And I have since high school, and I do today. So everyone has a challenge vis-a-vis the marital ideal. Everyone. Some more than others, I admit it. Okay.
It's over there.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I have the iPad. Okay, here we go. Guy or Guy, G-U-Y, from Sao Paulo, Brazil, 43 years old. Hi, Dennis. I've been following your talks, programs, and writings for the past 4 years. Good. Thank you for the contribution you bring to the world in defending what is true, and so on, advocating Judeo-Christian values, etc. My question is in regard to wisdom, based on one of your last five-minute videos, why the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Good man. It's a very important one. My understanding from the video was that you define wisdom as, quote, understanding as much about life as possible. Yep, that's one of my definitions. I wonder if you can expand a little on this definition, taking into account that throughout the Bible, wisdom is defined as fear of God, as in Proverbs 9:10. Lastly, what does it mean to you to fear God? Thank you, and may God keep blessing you abundantly. Well, first of all, this is very important. The Bible does not define wisdom as fear of God. It says it begins with fear of God. Not the same thing. You can fear God and not be wise, but you can't be wise without fear of God. And I will just tell you a proof that I have. Name me one secular institution in the world today that produces wisdom. I'll give you a moment. Berkeley, Stanford, Yale, Princeton, Oxford. The places producing the stupidest ideas are the most secular places we have, the university. So I have proof. 20 years ago or so, I wrote a column, it's on the internet, in fact, how I found God at Columbia University. And that's exactly what happened. I kept asking, why are such bright people teaching me nonsense? And that's when I realized wisdom begins with fear of God. Why is fear of God so important? Did I mention that? I know I've done one fireside chat on fear. So in a nutshell, everybody walks around with fear. So it'll either be fear of humans or fear of God. If you fear God, you get stronger because you don't fear people, in a nutshell. Okie doke, Richard, 39, Los Angeles, California. I've been studying history my whole life. I care deeply about figuring out what is true. One thing that's been challenging for me is the rise of conspiracy theories. There are some plausible theories, but there are also other elaborate ones about the moon landings being faked, 9/11 being an inside job, and of course, the Kennedy assassination. It seems that many of them are becoming widely accepted among conservatives. Do you think it's a good thing that more and more conservatives believe these theories, and what's your advice for evaluating them wisely? Okay, first of all, I don't know any conservative who thinks the moon landing was faked. I have never met one, let's put it that way. If I met a conservative, or frankly, a non-conservative, who thought the moon landing was fake, I would ask them to provide me the evidence how such an elaborate fake could have been staged that and that nobody in all these years, what was the moon landing, 68, I think? 69. It was 69, I think. So that's 31. That's 53 years ago. For 53 years, everybody involved has kept his mouth shut. It's a little hard to believe. Anyway, what was the point of faking it? To scare the Soviets? It's okay. What was the other one here? There were two others. Oh, this, okay. That one is just silly. This one is evil. 9/11 being an inside job. It's evil if you believe that, whether Republican or Democrat, it's irrelevant, that American officials murdered 3,000 of their fellow citizens and then blamed it on Muslims. Why would they do that? And there wasn't a shred of evidence for it. Life, truths in life are usually what is clear. We cloudy it up. I mean, it was clear who did it. The, what was it, 18, I think? The 18 Islamists who did that. We know their names. We know their backgrounds. We know everything about them, essentially. They did it. We know why they did it. Osama bin Laden, who orchestrated it, his life's hatred was of America and Israel. And he wanted to bring down America if he could. So this inside job on 9/11 is really a vile, that's a vile one. And again, there must be people who believe it. I think that there are people who want to believe conspiracy theories. It makes life exciting. Or it means you're in the know and the rest of us are just in the dark. And maybe that gives you a good feeling. I don't know why. Kennedy assassination is a more complex issue. My whole life, I have believed that Lee Harvey Oswald, the assassin, acted alone. I am open to other arguments. None of them have persuaded me yet. But by the way, I'm not sure it's important. Whether Oswald acted alone or with someone else, what ultimate difference does it make? Though it might be true that it's been hidden, but I don't know what the upshot is. So let's say there was another one or another two guys with Oswald shooting at Kennedy. And therefore what? What changes? Okay.
Time's up?
Yeah. I spoke a lot on the opening question.
You did. It basically became your topic.
Well, so it really did become the topic. Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo. So many good questions. Well, as I've always believed, it is better for you to think this is too short than too long. Is that fair?
That's fair.
All right, we love hearing from you. And I hope you'll pick up the next edition of the Rational Bible. This is the heart of everything that I believe about life. And read the 4,000 reviews on Amazon. You'll see how many people's lives have been touched. Anyway, thank you for watching. I'll tell Otto that you missed him and see you next week. Thank you for watching this video. To help keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.